It's Wednesday, the 21st of August, and this is the Monocle Minute. Here are the stories we're following today. Ukraine moves to reduce its reliance on Russian gas amid fears that supplies could be cut.
What we're seeing right now is Ukraine and Moldova hedging their risks to meet that reality after the contract expires and Russian gas does not flow through Ukrainian and Moldovan territory anymore.
And Boris Johnson said he wouldn't meet with European Union leaders until they agreed to his Brexit demands. Today, he'll shake hands with Angela Merkel. Tomorrow, Emmanuel Macron. Plus, Germany takes aim at unauthorized drones, and a lesson in relations with the Kremlin, courtesy of Finland. I'm Ben Rylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now. Ukraine is preparing for a potential cut to its gas supplies by striking a deal with Moldova. More than a third of Russia's gas exports to the European Union are directed through Ukraine, and an agreement between Kyiv and Moscow allows Ukraine the option to use some of that gas. But that agreement is due to expire in January. And amid tensions with the Kremlin, Kyiv is growing increasingly concerned that Russia could stop supplies. I'm joined on the line by Maxim Aristavi, research fellow with the Atlantic Council and co-founder of Hromadsky International, an independent news outlet in Kyiv. Maxim, how much influence does Russia have over Ukraine's gas infrastructure?
Well, the most important thing to remember that Ukraine does not consume Russian gas since 2015 as a result of just cutting the supply or refusing to buy Russian gas after the Kremlin invaded the country. So up until now, Russia mainly used the Ukrainian territory as a transit point for supplying for supplies of gas, Russian gas, to Europe. But at the end of this year, the contract for that transit expires. So what we're seeing right now is actually Ukraine and Moldova hedging their risks and to kind of meet that reality after the contract expires and Russian gas does not flow through Ukrainian and Moldovan territory anymore.
And how would this deal with Moldova work?
Well, basically, they got to update the infrastructure because there was just one flow of gas from the east to west. And now they got to do and update the infrastructure so there is a reverse gas flow. The similar infrastructure updates happened after 2015 on Ukrainian territory. And now Ukraine, buys a third of its annual gas demand from European Union through Hungary, from Poland, and from Slovakia. And they also had to update their infrastructure so there is a reverse gas flow. By now, we're talking about this specific incident. It's going to affect at least 15% of annual gas consumption in Ukraine, and it will add up to it. So it's a very important hedge risking instrument for Ukraine and also for Moldova. And Moldova will lose Russian transit capacities as well because of TurkStream, a pipeline, gas pipeline that will deliver Russian gas to Europe through Turkey, bypassing Ukraine and Moldova.
Maxim, are there enough alternatives when it comes to gas for Ukraine to completely remove its reliance on Russia?
Yes, it was actually one of the biggest success stories when it comes to Ukraine after the Russian invasion, updating its energy infrastructure and also making sure that not only Ukraine does not buy any Russian gas, but it does not rely even on the Russian transit gas as it was the case years before the invasion. However, I mean, we all know that Russia and the Kremlin specifically has been using energy supplies to Europe as a foreign policy blackmail tool. And Ukraine and other Russian neighbors know that very well. But now, the same issue arises with Nord Stream. And Nord Stream 2 is a massive Russian energy gas pipeline that is supposed to bypass, again, Ukraine and Moldova and deliver Russian gas to Germany directly. But a lot of, backlash in Europe around that pipeline, that basically a lot of people warned that, Russia has not changed in any way and will be using the same energy tool as a blackmail tool in their foreign policy in years after Nord Stream is taking online.
Maxim Aristavi, thank you. Just a few weeks ago, Britain was insisting that Boris Johnson would absolutely not be meeting with leaders from the European Union until they first agreed to change their position on the Irish backstop. Well, today the British Prime Minister is in Berlin to sit down with Chancellor Angela Merkel before heading to Paris tomorrow to meet with President Emmanuel Macron. Johnson is expected to ask both leaders to consider reopening the Brexit withdrawal agreement that Theresa May previously negotiated and was then unable to renegotiate. The journalist and author Terry Stiassny told Monocle that the so-called Irish backstop question remains one of the thorniest parts of Britain's plan for leaving the EU. And a letter penned by the Prime Minister to European Council President Donald Tusk this week hasn't made things any clearer.
The backstop is a way of solving what still seems to be an irresolvable conundrum in Brexit politics, which is, on the one hand, the Republic of Ireland is going to remain in the EU. There is a land border, obviously, with Northern Ireland, which is part of the United Kingdom. And the Good Friday Agreement, which basically created a peaceful situation in Northern Ireland and the Republic, said there should never be a fixed hard border between those two parts of the island of Ireland. So if you can't resolve this conundrum, you have to have some kind of other arrangements once Britain leaves the EU so as not to have a border, which means that either Northern Ireland or the whole of the UK would have to subscribe to the same rules as apply in the Republic, which are EU rules on, for example, trade and being part of the single market and the customs union. And many people, particularly who voted against Theresa May's Brexit deal, don't like that idea because, as Boris Johnson has set out in his letter, it means that either part of all of the UK, if the Irish question can't be resolved, would have to still abide by EU rules and regulations. We're still very, very thin on the idea of what these so-called alternative arrangements or flexible, creative alternatives are going to be. You need to have something. So he may well be told, look, there is no deal to be done here. There is no reopening of the withdrawal agreement. The question is then whether he feels pushed into giving more ground or whether he's going to stick to this line that says, Brexit comes on the 31st of October, whatever happens. It's going to be quite hard for him because that's been the defining thing of his prime ministership so far, to say that's what's happening.
Staying in Germany now, a proposed new law is aiming to clamp down on a rising menace in the skies.
Germany's transport ministry is moving fast to counter a rising threat to air traffic, drones. The plan, set to be submitted before the end of September by German air traffic control, will expand the legislation around operating unmanned remote control vehicles within 1.5 kilometers of airports and propose further measures. This said, a blanket ban on drones near airports won't be enough to stop those intent on using them for harm. Despite the presence of an estimated 500,000 devices in private and commercial hands in Germany, this initiative is the first to propose a unified system of defense. There's currently no process for monitoring or stopping suspicious drones, so airport authorities around the world will be watching Germany's next moves closely.
And finally, Monocle's Melkon Çarçoğlu'nun explains why other nations ought to take note of Finland's approach to diplomacy with its prickly neighbor.
Finland has always been a sobering influence on the Russian bear across the border, its attitude marked by the cordial, active neutrality it has more or less pursued since the Second World War. In that vein, when Finnish President Sauli Niinisto announced last week that Vladimir Putin would visit Helsinki today, he said that no subject would be off the table during the bilateral talks. This sounds vague, but the notion is sincere. Finland is always happy to lend an ear, disagree though it might, and it's this political pragmatism that has allowed the country to successfully jockey Russia. Indeed, it has improved relations. The idea of a Finnish businessman hopping on the high-speed link to St. Petersburg for lunch seemed unfathomable even 20 years ago. Now it's a reality, thanks to Finland's level-headed practicality. The approach has also earned Putin's respect. Finland takes him seriously, which is what every strongman wants, without making him look weak. There's a lesson here for other world leaders. It's not about making nice or riling Russia, but taking a firm yet diplomatic stance.
That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Rylan. The Monocle Minute will be back with the stories setting our agenda tomorrow morning.